This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, bonus time with my man, David Dennis Jr. Welcome. Now, you got some news for me, some stuff to talk about, but you also said you had something you ain't want to tell me. You're going to spring it on me. So I don't know when you're going to spring it on me, but I'm looking forward to it.
That sounded way more dramatic than I meant it to be. But yeah, no, I feel you. No, I'm going to start with probably something that sounds like a bad idea for a podcast, which is something that neither of us care about. But I want to talk about something neither of us care about.
I love it.
Which is Lizzo and the
Food. Oh yeah, my daughter, my 11-year-old, went to that concert in DC, and the flute is, she played a really old flute that belonged to a founding father, right? Who was it? Whose flute was it?
James Mason's flute.
Oh, okay.
But like, told me that like Questlove played George Washington's drums, or like Alicia Keys played Ulysses S. Grant's guitar, piano. I'd have been like, cool, yeah, whatever. Like, I would not. I don't care at all. But white folks are mad.
I don't believe that. So I believe that the mermaid thing and this thing is all a Russian bot farm hoax. It's no way that there are enough people to actually care about what color the mermaid is, or what race the mermaid is, or that care that Lizzo spit in an old flute.
I just want to make sure the flute was clean. That was all I cared about. I was like, how thoroughly did they clean the flute? That was like my number one concern. But like, people are like, Matt Walsh, some guy who, I don't know, he's white, but he was like, you know, this is like appeasing the woke left. And I was like, I'm not appeased. I don't give a shit about Lizzo and the flute. Like, zero black people care, and everybody's upset about it. It is hilarious.
Yeah, I'm with you on the clean part. I do not want like the bubonic plague. I don't know what was popping back then. Scurvy. I don't know what was killing people.
I
don't want Lizzo to bring that back, all because she wanted to play an old flute. And I also believe that no one cares about this. I think that the people who say that they care about this are people that are like outraged trolls who are looking to get us upset or get some other group riled up because it'll get them attention. Because we care about a lot of stupid things. As people, I was going to say in this country, but generally in the world, there are a lot of stupid things that get our attention that are very stupid. Like, I mean, we work at ESPN. Sports in general are not like super consequential, but boy, do we care. But I refuse to believe that something that we didn't even know existed a week ago, now people are actually up in arms about it. I think they're trying to create something just to have something to talk about. And we don't have to talk about it anymore, because the only flute I care about is the one that's keeping Andre 3000 from giving us new bars, because he be walking around fluting in the streets and not making new albums, which is disappointing to me.
Yeah, give Lizzo that flute so Andre 3000 could make some music. Like, I would only care if Andre 3000 played the Green Power Rangers flute. Like, if she did that, I would be outraged if she desecrated Tommy's flute. But, you know, I don't care. Whatever. It's just hilarious to me that if like one of these folks came up to me and was like, "Ah, I don't want Lizzo to play the flute," I'd be like, "Okay, like, fine, it's okay. I don't care. I didn't even know that it happened till she. I don't even think Lizzo cares about the flute.
I don't think so either. But it got her some pub, which I guess is a good thing. You got anything else, or is it time for my surprise? My surprise is not that exciting.
Okay, yeah, you could do your surprise.
My surprise is I started reading your book, and
Do we plan on finishing it?
Yeah. We're definitely planning on finishing when we have some time. I read the first two chapters, and it made me think about trade-offs. Honestly, it's something that is always in the back of my mind, because I think generally we like to have absolutes. Like, we like to say, this is the right decision, this is the wrong decision. It's the right thing to do, wrong thing to do. These are the good guys, these are the bad guys. And it's hard for me, but I like try to remind myself always that when we make decisions, we're making trade-offs. And like, particularly as like a breadwinner in my family, it's like, it reminded me, and on a much less consequential scale, it reminded me of the decisions that it seemed like your father had to make. Your father was very much involved in the civil rights movement. And at least in the early chapters in the book, you kind of delve into how there was a cost to that. Like, while you're very proud and impressed with him, he was not there in the way that some fathers should have been. And I think about that often with me. It's like I have ambition, like not ambition to change the world and make it a more equitable place, ambition to just win and dominate and do better and better at stuff. So I'm not nearly as benevolent as your dad, but like that trade-off is a tough one to make. And it's probably, at least for me in reading the book, like it's much more easy, or it's much easier to justify it for him because he's fighting for a cause. It's harder for me to justify it because like it's forced me to confront the reasons why I want to be successful, because like I was fortunate enough to have a career that like a first career that was financially lucrative enough that I can't even be like, I gotta do this so that we can stay in this house, you know? And it's like, I gotta do this so that Black people can have the right to vote. Nah, I gotta do this because my ego will not allow me to sit around and not be great at something.
Yeah, no, I feel you. There is a definite cost to these things. And, you know, I will disagree, though. I do think that you are using your voice to make the world more equitable through sports, though. So I don't want you to shortchange. I mean, you're doing like a union stuff and
whatever.
All, like, come on now. You got to give
me cool. But anyway, you.
I know you.
Yeah,
you
it's weird.
I know you
it's
hate
weird.
These
Let's
things.
Not do it. Okay, I appreciate it. And I'm going to have them edit all out. Christina, take out any compliments or any justifications. Edit them all out. All right. So what's next? We're not going to sit here and talk about me anymore. If there's something about the book that you want to talk about, I'm with that. Or if there's some other topic you want to hit.
Well, I do want to tell people that the name of the book is The Movement Made Us. And it's wherever books are sold. And you can go get it. Steph Curry's October Literati Book Club selection. So you can let's do it through that.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! Playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But yeah, so I do want to talk about something actually slightly related to that, which is go back. So 2020, right, was obviously a really tough year for a lot of folks, right? And especially Black folks with the George Floyd of it all. And at that time, I went back and like I went to Brunswick, Georgia. I did a story in Ahmaud Arbery. I talked to some folks, his family. And I spent a lot of that summer writing about really traumatic stuff, right? And it was really difficult. And I did not take care of myself while I was doing that. And I was thinking about that a lot this week while I was watching you guys on TV, football players, who were watching Tua and like these real life coming to grasp with your own sort of like mortality and watching your friends and knowing about this stuff. And even before Tua thing happened, you went into detail on Debatable about like a lot of friends and things that you saw. And so I think as Black men, we don't do this enough. I want to do a mental health check. I wanted to see how you were doing and give you some sort of space to talk about that, how this week has been for you.
That's the surprise, is that you want me to crack open and tell you about what's going on inside of me. So I mean, be honest with you, these are things
I just want to do a check. I just want to check
I'm good. I had last week I did a conversation with about the Tua stuff with my wife, and one with DeQuell Jackson. And DeQuell was talking about, he's a former player too, linebacker, and he was talking about how he goes to therapy regularly. And I was like, yeah, I probably need to. I've never done it. I think I've gone once or twice, but like I didn't catch on. It's not something that I do regularly. It's probably something I should start doing. I feel fine generally, you know, but the normal like ebbs and flows of like how people are feeling, I feel like I'm within a normal band. But I do, as I mentioned to my wife last week, I do sometimes feel like while I'm still within what I believe to be the normal band, like my emotions go further outside of my traditional thing. Like I get angrier quicker and like sadder quicker, or like deeper sadness than I felt before, which is a weird thing that might just have something to do with like aging. Cause like, I know that, you know, like my mom is like, she's quick to tears for joy or sadness now. And I think as a result of like, having lived a lot and seen different things. And I think that's a normal like trajectory, but most of all, like overall, I feel like the key for me at least is having objectives, like having something to look forward to and something to work towards. And if I have those two things, like the toughest times I felt is when I had nothing, you know, like I didn't have anything to work towards and nothing to look forward to. And it's not even that stuff was going bad in my life. It was just like, I need to be like, man, I can't wait to the end of this month because I'm going to do this. Or also need to be like, man, I gotta stay up late and knock this out. And as counterintuitive as it is, like, those are the things that work for me. And it's different things that work for other people. And maybe it's putting Band-Aids on it or whatever, which is probably the reason why I need to speak to a therapist. But like all the stuff that I think players were being confronted with and fans were being confronted with and the Tua stuff last week is not stuff that's like new to me. I while it's not always front of mind, it's always something that's in my mind. So I didn't feel the big shock, which is why I reacted a little different than most people or a lot of people. I wasn't much for the like, the NFL is awful and evil and we need to clean it up and this is terrible. How could they do this to Tua? Like, while all that may be true, that wasn't my reaction. My reaction was like, yeah, we've been nuked this, you know, like, and it's like it's kind of in a way, the Tua stuff is like evidence that things, that the processes that they've installed have worked by and large, because the processes, and by worked, I mean, they've limited those. Like, we used to see that type of stuff a lot, you know?
Right.
We don't see it that much anymore because it's worked. But what they have not done is made the game any safer, because, like, it can't be made safe. And every Sunday that guys go out there, they get a little bit closer to CTE. Whether they walk off the field under their own power or they win or lose or whatever, they're taking hits to the head. Even if they aren't getting knocked out or concussed, they're taking hits to the head, which the evidence suggests that the more you do that, the more damage you do to the brain and the more likely it is that you're going to have some sort of CTE and maybe the complications that go along with it.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I think, you know, there was a lot of discussion about like Black trauma, right? And, you know, watching, you know, 2020, watching all these videos of this stuff. And like, I would definitely categorize what we saw on Monday or
it was a Thursday.
Thursday. With Tua, yeah, Thursday with Tua falls definitely under that category, you know, of that same type of video that we're just like inundated with. That's like really painful to watch. Like this, like And they kept showing this replay, which is like something we see all the time too, of like this dehumanized sort of black man on the ground. Like he could have died, you know, like this was a thing. And like, how do we, as black folks and black men, you know, especially because like we sort of are conditioned to in this job to just like be ready to have a take and be ready to write something and be ready to have something to say about it. But one thing I learned, because 2020, I burnt myself out. I was not healthy, not taking care of myself. I felt like I had to talk about this stuff at all times. And I was sort of hit this crack point in my life where I just was not well, you know? And I just, you know, wanted to check in because I wanted to be cognizant of that. Like, that stuff is damaging to us to watch this dude go through this, you know, publicly on camera, then have to sort of chart it out without thinking about ourselves in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's an interesting parallel you made there. And like, obviously, two is not black, but I don't think that's the point. Is the point is that that trauma is something, I think the parallel is there because it's like we get up in arms as a society when we see like police violence videos against black men.
Right.
And we all demand that things change and we want solutions. And I don't know if that's what we really want as much as we want to be made to feel better, you know? And
right.
And feeling better is normally not attacking the actual root, because attack the root of some of these issues would require us to break down the structures in society that we've become very accustomed to and comfortable with. And the same is probably true in football, where it's like, we don't actually want to fix, you know, we don't actually want to change it, because then that would really, really change football, which is not something that we really want. We want to be able to point at somebody, be it the police or whoever, and say, you are the bad guy, and not accept our complicity as a society in like perpetuating the structures that allow this stuff to keep happening in football and outside. Wow, this has gotten deeper than I expected.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised.
Thanks, David.
That's why I spring these things on. But you know, I will, now that I know that you're thinking about therapy, I'm going to be bugging you about doing that.
Oh, damn it! I shouldn't have told you, because I was just going to let it fade away and not actually do anything about it.
Oh no, that's a wrap. No, that's over. I've been seeing a therapist. I see my therapist. She's dope. She helped me with the book. I mean, the book was, as you saw, very like tough thing to write and tough thing to sort of come to grips with. And I saw like some movement folks this weekend. It was very like emotional for me. And like, I was, you know, me and my therapist gonna work through it. And, you know, so I will push for that sort of stuff. Cause like, we got to have somebody to talk to.
All right, brother. I appreciate it. I'll see you next week.
Yeah. Let's get some Lizzo flute to play us out to, boost the mood a little bit.
I got you. Here you go. Doo-doo-doo. That's all we got.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.